My name is Ginny Carlin.
And I'm Jamie Gordon.
And this is the BFBS podcast, Mav Geeks, a military aircraft obsession.
Thanks for joining us for our penultimate episode of Series 5. We've brought you a solid 3 months of Mav Geek goodness. How on earth did we get away with this, Ginster? but of course, we've still got one more episode next week, so do look out for that.
What's that? Please, don't cry. Don't beg. Maybe a little. Oh, now you just sound needy. I mean, if only there was a Christmas Eve Mav Geek special going out on BFBS The Forces Station at 3 till 4 UK time, featuring Santa Claus and BA Captain and now culinary author Al Bridger, called Winner Winner Mav Geek's Dinner. Can you imagine how good that would be?
Yeah, it would be. Like, I have a choice. You've already agreed to rope in Santa, and you've tried the recipes as well, haven't you?
So cynical, Jamie, but yeah. Let's move on to the Aviation Week. What have you seen?
Well, it's become a national story, and it's about these drones that have been flying over Lakenheath, Mildenhall and Felwell, RAF bases that the Americans use. But it's got to the extent now where they've drafted in about 60 experts of varying degrees, Brits, to try and figure out what on earth is going on. I don't know if it's made much news over where you are.
Yeah, well, it's been sort of all over the place, really. And I think it's quite, you know, with everybody chatting, well, with the chat being about Ukraine and the missiles and who can use them and where they can use them, you know, it's kind of just heightened tensions even more, hasn't it? And I don't know if you've seen as well, there were some beautiful pictures of the B-52 flying over, I think it was like the Arab Gulf, partnered by the RAF F-35s. The F-35s look tiny compared to the B-52. Beautiful blue sky. It just looked amazing, but an immense show of strength there.
And it's a gorgeous picture. If you get the opportunity, go and seek them out because it really is beautiful. So on to this week's guest, Al Bridger. You may remember from Series 4, Episode 1, when he took his life in his own hands by taking Ginny flying in the BA simulator for the 777, wasn't it?
That's right. And as I keep saying, the third person in our Mav Geek relationship, like Jamie said, Al was an F4 Phantom pilot before flying 74 and 777s. And now he's put together a flavour of flight, an absolutely brilliant recipe book devoted to the history of British Airways in-flight food.
So here is Al Bridger, and to say we were excited to catch up with him again was somewhat of an understatement.
Oh, my life. Being here in the wilds of Canada, and it's like a vision before me. It is the holy trinity of Mav Geek goodness. We have got planes, we have got food, and we have got Al Bridger. Al, I am so chuffed to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fantastic. And what a pleasure and a privilege to be back with you. Oh, it's been a long time, and I missed it. So you're great. And thank you for the invite. So kind.
Well, we have missed you. I should say it's not really Holy Trinity. It's a Holy Quadruple, because the F4 Phantom, obviously Jamie's favourite ever plane. Al, you just don't get any better, mate. Seriously, you just keep improving. I don't know how you do it. Because every time we see you, you add something extra to your fantastic marvellousness. And today, it's a book about food. I cannot even wait to get into this.
Well, you're too kind, as always. So, yeah, I like to keep busy, definitely.
Busy is definitely what you are. I mean, let's start at the beginning. It makes sense. It's a beautifully put together book with lots of archive and a wonderful history of the food and the aircraft. But why?
Well, that's a great question, really, because a few years back, I was really privileged. BA came along and they said to me, would you oversee our museum, our heritage centre, the fabulous Speedbird Heritage Centre up at Heathrow? And of course, absolutely, I will. So off I went, and I love history. I love British Airways. And I was rummaging through the archives, and I'd go through some drawers, and there was all these old menu cards from, you know, way back 1930s, all typed up, all the way up to modern day. And some of them are beautiful pieces of art. And I thought, do you know what? These are fabulous. It'd be great to write about the history of British Airways food and drink, and then bring these menus to life. And it kind of just happened like that.
I need to ask you, Al. So one of the things, looking back, when people were in first class, and I mean, this is, we're talking like the real golden age of flying, you know, there'd be a chef come out with a joint of meat.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
A, why does that not happen anymore? And B, how is that even possible?
It was amazing, wasn't it? And you've got to remember, I mean, I'll disagree with you slightly because I think every single age is the golden age. I think every age has just got better and better and better. And you look at how, you know, the airline British Airways has just tried to get better and better. So I think they're all golden ages.
Okay, but back to your question.
Back to your question. Well, of course, you've got to remember back in the 70s that IFE and all the wonderful films and everything we have now, that wasn't available. So the actual food was the theatre. So they'd come out with a joint of roast beef and you'd say what you wanted, you know, rare from the middle or well done from the ends. And that was part of the theatre of the flight. So it was a wonderful thing and it was entertainment. So yeah, it was incredible.
What I found fascinating is going right back to the early days of transport, certainly later on, they were using aircraft that were basically bombers converted into airliners, for want of a better phrase at the moment. I mean, there's a great picture of people having to sit in wicker chairs with no seatbelts. I mean, we all have to start somewhere, and I get that. But what really interested me was how, after World War II, this whole idea of flying long distances really came into its own.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it came into its own really, as you say, all the way back from World War One, really, because it was all those surplus aircraft they had left over. And they thought, you know, there's a real demand to travel, so let's use these aircraft. But like you say, they were converted bombers, you know, and who wants to sit in the gun turret? So they quickly put some wicker chairs in or whatever they did to start that, you know, that thirst for travel. And that developed and developed and developed. And obviously World War II came along and the kind of put a stop to international travel for everybody. But of course, the technology just took off from there. And of course, the other thing that happened for World War II was before then, there weren't many airfields. And if you wanted to go a long way, you needed a long runway. So what did you do? You used a river or a lake and used a flying boat. After World War II, there's all these airfields around. So suddenly you don't need flying boats anymore. But it was really that early development away from bombers to create what they called airliners, which were like liners in the air, you know, very much based on railway carriages and things, but a beautiful, beautiful aircraft.
So the book is just fantastic. We're not just saying that because you're sat in front of us. It's a beautiful book and there's just so much of you in there. You know, you can see it's a real labour of love. You're doing it when you read it. When you look back, I mean, the section about Concorde, obviously, you know, who doesn't love Concorde? But what were your favourite bits to really bring out in the book?
I guess the whole thing was a real project that I really loved. You know, even thinking up the name, Flavour of Flight, that took to bouncing ideas off with my wife at the pub. So the whole thing has been lovely to put together. And as I said, the whole history piece and delving into those archives and finding all these old menus and then actually cooking, because I did a lot of cooking to get it right. You know, some of the things I created in trying to produce some of these recipes were you wouldn't believe. So yeah, so it got me cooking, which I enjoy, and it got me delving into the archives and learning more and more about that fabulous over 100-year history that British Airways has got.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the food was the theatre, if you like. I mean, they did have a crack at doing in-flight entertainment quite early on, and we'll maybe come back to that later. But certainly, galley space was always a problem in the early days. But then you get to sort of the 50s, and you've got the Constellation, you've got the Stratocruiser. They were actually accommodating the idea of enjoying food on board and serving it and prepping it.
Yeah, absolutely they were. So they were custom designed as airliners. And of course, if you're going to fly a long way, you've got to feed people. So you need a galley that works. Some of them are quite small. The Constellation had quite a small galley, but the Stratocruiser was just, what an aircraft. You know, double-decker heaven, really. So downstairs, there's a lounge where you can go and enjoy drinks. Upstairs, the galley, the berths where you could sleep. You know, it was proper modern-day flying. Absolutely unbelievable. And designed by Boeing exactly for that. It was amazing.
Oh, my life. I'm flying on a Dreamliner in a few weeks, Hal. And when you just said about the old, going downstairs to the bar, that would just be an absolute dream. But, really looking forward to the Dreamliner as well. Hal, when you're flying the 777 or the aircraft that you fly, do you eat like the business class or first class food?
I try and eat all of food because, I love food. So it sounds crazy, you know. I try and eat meals from across the aircraft. We have crew meals as well. We're lucky we can have, some of the customer food as well. And, you know, one of my real favourites, we did a Christmas meal in our World Traveller cabin and it was fabulous. But they was too fabulous because I could eat more than one. It was just lovely, lovely food. I try and try as many different dishes as I can. And we're very lucky that we get the chance to do that.
Now, maybe I've watched Airplane too much, and this might be a stupid question, but Do the crew eat separately from the passengers, just in case?
Yeah, it's a good question, Jamie. And you know, way back when, yes, definitely, you know, you wouldn't eat the same meal. But food hygiene is so amazing these days. It's incredible. So we can literally, we can eat the same meal as each other, you know, and the food on board is just fabulous in the way it's produced. The catering teams are just amazing these days. You know, it's wonderful food. So that's not a problem anymore.
I was going to ask that same question, Jamie. It's always something that I've really wondered about as well. So the preparation of the food and the menus, Al, you must have like a special group of people who come up with the menus that British Airways are going to use.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole catering team. We've got a, you know, a whole customer team that really, they're incredible people. You know, I'm a home cook. That's all I am. And we've got these amazing chefs who work to constantly improve the menus and the quality of the food on board. And of course, there's a whole science behind food on board an aircraft. It's not like popping to your local restaurant. You know, your whole palate is different in the air. And I think understanding of that has got better and better and better over time, as I cover in the book. And that makes producing beautiful meals an even harder task, and then doing it at scale and then serving it at scale in the middle of the Atlantic, 40,000 feet. It's a miracle. I think it's amazing.
I love the photos that you've been able to use for this book. I mean, some of them from the 1950s, all that colour, and, you know, it just looks like a wonderful existence. But I wanted to talk about, we were talking there about people who put catering together for airliners, but people like the Roux brothers got involved in Concorde. So there is quite a close association between quality food and quality flights.
Absolutely. And I think that's all part of the quest of trying to make a better and better product for the customer. So, you know, we've got our own catering experts and they really know aviation. They know how the palate works at height. And then if you couple that with a wonderful chef, I mean, the Roux brothers, exceptional chefs. And we work with Tom Kerrish, now Michelin star chef. And you get that expertise along with our expertise and you can create some fabulous food. I'd say the celebrity chefs, we've been working with them for years and years and years. And it's incredible that they can come together and create some absolutely awesome menus. Incredible.
Al, let's just go back to you saying that your palate really changes at height. I never realised that. What happens to your palate? How does it change? I mean, all I know is when I sit on a plane, I want to eat Tangfastics. But I always want to eat Tangfastics. Yeah, how does your palate change? What causes it to change?
It's just the environment. So if you think of a modern airliner, the environment, well, you're going on a Dreamliner, aren't you? So the cabin is fabulous. You know, the humidity is great. It's very low down in terms of the cabin altitude. So it's closer and closer to the environment on the ground, but it's still in the air. And that is, it's different. Your palate, just the taste buds work differently and different flavors and different tastes work differently at height. So it was really back in the 70s that the science of that started. People started to think, man, hang about, you know, this food tastes like this on the ground, but then we eat it in the air and it's different. And then we did a lot of work with Heston Blumenthal and we introduced a thing called height cuisine, very clever. And he really understood this science and it was about using, you know, strong flavors, umami and tomato-based parmesan, all these sort of stronger flavors that work really well at altitude. And if you look back through the menus, it kind of happened by default through the years because recipes like lamb cutlets, you see lamb way back in the 1930s, and it still appears on the modern menus. So obviously, it just tastes great at height. So it's the same with the wines as well. We got a master of wine it's wonderful. And he goes and selects these incredible wines that work well at altitude, and they work well with the meals we have. So huge amount of work goes into it. It's incredible. I love it.
And it's not just the first class passengers that are getting quality food, is it?
No, everybody. As I said, one of my favourite meals was that Christmas meal that we served in the World Traveller. I went up to the States recently to visit my daughter and we flew in World Traveller and we had a fabulous meal down the back, a sort of noodles, quite a strong sauce with it, but it was lovely. And when you think that we're serving that to, you know, 100 plus people in one go. It's amazing. I just adore food. And every time I eat food on an aeroplane, I try and think that, you know, if you went to the local restaurant and said, well, we're going to serve 300 covers and we're going to do it together at the same time, and the kitchen's quite remote from where we're going to do it, you'd think, wow, you're mad. But of course, that's what we do on an aeroplane all the time. So it's amazing.
I think as well, Al, you know, and what Jamie's just said, everybody sort of seems to knock airline food, don't they? You know, when they get on the aircraft and they bring the food out and everybody sort of turns the nose up, but nobody leaves it. You know, I have to fly long haul quite a bit living in Canada.
I am a little partial to biz at the moment, Al. But so, you know, wherever I'm sitting, the food is always really, really good. And like you're saying, gosh, my mouth's watering. I'm thinking about it now. I guess it kind of is all affected, like you say, but oh gosh, I just want that Parmesan ravioli now. But people complain about it. But actually, the standard of food is really, really good.
I think it's exceptional, the food. And you know, we serve thousands and thousands of meals every year, and we do our level best to make them a wonderful part of your journey. And we know our CEO, Sean Doyle, wrote a foreword for the book, and he talks about how customers look forward to food and when they go flying and how important it is as a part of their journey. So, I mean, I've eaten a lot of food on aeroplanes over the years, and I have very, very rarely been disappointed by a meal. I think it's wonderful. So, yeah, it's a shame when people don't get the experience they want, because obviously we want them to have a fabulous time, and that includes their meal. So, but yeah, I find the food wonderful, and I think everybody tries as best they can, you know, from preparing it, we're designing it, to preparing it, to loading it, to cooking it, to presenting it. The wonderful cabin crew do an incredible job to make it the best experience we can for everyone.
Definitely.
I have to say, last time I flew long haul was Barbados earlier this year, and it was on Chewy, and I didn't have no expectations whatsoever, but it was, the food was fantastic and the in-flight entertainment was amazing. And I hadn't expected that. So I think there is a sense that things are getting better, no matter whether you turn left or right when you go on board. It doesn't matter.
You're absolutely right. I say, I visited my daughter the other day, and we were in our World Traveller cabin, which is turning right. And we had a wonderful flight. You know, the in-flight entertainment was superb. The food was lovely. And the flight went in the blink of an eye. And you know, it's amazing. The cabins that are on the aircraft now, wherever you are, they're in incredible. They're just stunning. And I just love the whole concept of travel and flying. It's wonderful.
I need to tell you a little story, Al, just before I forget. And that is, when I read your book, it reminded me of something, one of my earliest memories. So people always say to me, oh, how do you get like to be, you know, so interested in aircraft? And it was because when I was about 4 years old, which, you know, I'm 50 this year, I've turned 50. So it was quite a while ago. I flew on a British Airways Lockheed TriStar to Athens. And the whole getting on the plane, seeing the plane, I just fell in love. And one of the things was that we will, me and my mum always remember, is the food on this flight, because they serve for a dessert a creme caramel.
Oh, wow. Yeah, lovely. And one of them in the book.
Oh, my gosh. So they serve this creme caramel. And to this day, my mum is quite obsessed with the old creme caramel still. You know, if we had to pick a yogurt or anything, my mum would go straight for a creme caramel. So when I saw your book, I thought it's quite a nice little, like, a little full circle for me. You know, started off with the British Airways Lockheed TriStar. And of course, the food, Al. It's always about the food for me. Look at me, good grief. But the whole creme caramel coming round in a circle and stuff. So I had to tell you that little story today.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, you've got the book. You can make the creme caramel. And it's a wonderful thing to make, because, I mean, the recipes in the book, I've made them as simple as possible. They are really designed for home cooks. You know, home cooks that have never cooked before. Anyone, hopefully, can pick up Flavor of Flight, go thumb through it, pick themselves a recipe, and then create it. Because I did a lot of work to try and make them as simple as possible. Some of them are slightly trickier than others. There's some souffles in there, which takes a bit of practice. They taste fab. They just don't look superb at first one or two goes. But the creme caramel is probably similar. The creme caramel is not the easiest recipe in the book, but actually with a couple of goes, it will taste fabulous, whatever it looks like, but you'll just get better and better and better at it. So, you know, hopefully people will pick the book up and go, do you know what? I can cook. And it's great fun cooking, it really is.
And, you know, we shouldn't forget that you have a military background, which I think we alluded to earlier on. You flew fast jets with the RAF. Do you remember what your aircrew feeder used to dish up to you in the good old days?
Yeah, I do. None of that's in the book. we were terrible. We had the aircrew feeder when I was at Valley on the Hawk. It was really fabulous. I mean, the food they produced was what you wanted. You know, it was great tasting. It might not have been the healthiest for you, but back in the 90s, you wanted food that kept you going. When you're flying four sorties a day, you wanted something to keep your energy levels up, which was great. And I know back on the Phantom, we were terrible because we'd be rushing to get into debriefs and things. And I remember that the slab of cheddar we used to have, you'd carve a bit off the end of the cheddar, pop some toast in the toaster, and that was your lunch. With a cup of tea. But I say it was all great tasting food and it did what it needed to do, which was keep us, our energy levels up to go flying, several times a day. So it was brilliant.
And of course, there's not much room in those cockpits. So it's not like in store anything particularly, extravagant. There's no trays to be had. So
no, strangely not.
It has to be portable.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So yeah, no, it was great food and it kept us going, definitely.
Well, let's just talk about the book. What's the reception been like for the book?
Well, I hope it's been great. For me, I'm always thinking, oh no, people are going to think it's rubbish. It's been really good. The media have been really kind. It appeared in lots of the national newspapers and I did a television interview and all sorts. So the reception, I think, has been okay. And people say that it's great. I hope they're not just saying to me, oh, good book out. But I think it's... there's lots of great pictures in there. If you love history, there's a simple history there. I'm no great writer, honestly. So it's simple to read. The pictures are wonderful. And hopefully then you can actually bring it to life by having a go at these simple recipes. So I hope people enjoy it. Go out and try it at least.
Yeah. It's a beautiful book. It's beautifully written, Al. It's beautifully written.
Thank you.
And a very practical thing for the likes of me and Ginny, who A, love our aircraft, and B, the older I get, the more I love my food. I mean, I do like going to extravagant places these days, if the money allows. But I think it's just a wonderful history, and congratulations on putting this together. Mm. And yet it is a very practical book that should be in the kitchen for you to call upon as you wish.
Thank you. Yeah, that's very kind. I mean, I use it quite a bit, actually, because there's some real go-to recipes in there that I really enjoy. There's a roasted cauliflower risotto.
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, that was on our menus until very recently. And if you're not a cook, you might think, oh my goodness, a risotto, that's tricky. But actually, it's very, very simple. And the joy of a risotto is you could throw in stuff you want to throw in. So don't necessarily have to just follow the recipe, but there's lots of go-to recipes in there. I'll put a pineapple upside down cake that's in there. That's proper blast from the past, with the pineapple Ooh. Rings and the little cherry in the middle. That's lovely. Probably not my healthiest recipe in the book, and there are some healthy ones in there. But yeah, really delicious. When you want a bit of comfort food, it's lovely.
Al, when are we coming round? When are you cooking for us? Because we, honestly, you're saying about testing all this food. If you need two guinea pigs, then me and Jamie are your people. And then we can talk flying after that and look at all the memorabilia you've got.
Nothing would give me more pleasure than to spend an evening with you, cooking for you and talking about flying and the military fast jets and the whole military thing, because I just love it.
Oh, so great to talk to Al, and he's just so enthusiastic about everything he does, and he's enthusiastic about things that we love, flying and food.
Absolutely, and you know what I also love very much about Al is that he's enthusiastic about us, he loves the podcast. In fact, he just loves anything aviation. He is one of these people that he just loves going to work every single day.
And it doesn't appear that his talents are ever going to end. I mean, what, he flies fast jets, flies commercial jets, he writes books, what can't he do?
I know, right? Next year he's probably going to be supporting the Rolling Stones on tour, you know what I mean? That's all that's left for Al now.
I wouldn't put it past him, to be honest. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch to suggest a guest for Series 6 or an aircraft, or you just want to have a chat about one of the episodes, then get in touch with us at mavgeeks@bfbs.com.
And the Mavgeeks revolution continues as we bring you Mavgeeks on air to BFBS Radio from 6 UK time on a Tuesday and 1 o'clock UK time on a Saturday. Resistance is futile.
We'll catch you next week for the final time in Series 5.
Where we will be speaking to Dale Luckhurst, who is the head of brand, get this, Jamie. This is going to take you right back. And just before Christmas as well, for Airfix. Did you used to make Airfix models?
All the time. I loved it. I wasn't very good at it, but I loved it.
Did you used to get all the like bits of the aircraft stuck to your fingers?
Yeah, and I always got goo on the canopy, and as hard as I would try, I couldn't paint the things either, not very well, but I did enjoy doing it. And it, you know, I think that's what started my love of flying. And so we've got a lot to thank Airfix for.
Definitely. That's all coming next week.
Take it easy.
Ta-ra.